Today, the purpose of our meeting is to really understand the issues and get a sense of the legal landscape that pertains to the focus of our work. And then next meeting, we'll dive into whether we want to propose any statutory changes. And I am going to just call on members of this subcommittee and ask that you introduce yourselves. And Julie Finn, I'll start with you.
Sure. Hi, my name is Julie Finn, and I'm a member of this committee representing the judicial branch.
Kate McBrien.
Hi, I'm Kate McBrien. I'm the main state archivist, and I'm just here to be available to answer questions, provide additional information if needed.
Thank you. And I'm going to ask our OPLA analysts to introduce themselves as well. Colleen, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Good morning. Colleen McCarthy-Reed, staff to the advisory committee, and I work in the Office of Policy and Legal Analysis.
Judy Meyer.
I am Judy Meyer. I represent the interests of Maine's newspaper publishers.
And Jane Orbiton.
Jane Orbiton, also in OPLA with Colleen.
And Frank Stout.
Eric Stout.
Eric, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm the member of the Right to Know Advisory Committee with background in information technology, but I'm also Maine IT's records officer and proudly a member of the Maine Archives Advisory Board.
Thank you. Linda Clancy.
Good morning. I'm Linda Clancy, and I represent the Maine Press.
Lindsay Laxon.
Good morning. My name is Lindsay Laxon. I'm a legislative analyst with the Office of Policy and Legal Analysis.
And Representative Harnett.
Good morning, Senator Carney. Tom Harnett, House District 83, and I chair the Right to Know Advisory Committee.
And Amy Beveridge, we are just doing a round of introductions. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, I'm Amy Beveridge. I represent the Maine Broadcast Association.
Thank you. And as I said when we opened up, today's subcommittee meeting is really going to focus on understanding the issue and the legal landscape. And I should introduce myself. I'm Senator Ann Carney. I represent Senate District 29, and I've been asked to chair this subcommittee, and I'm happy to be with all of you this morning. And so we've done our introductions, and so let's dive into the issue. I will just give a little brief introduction to the issue. This issue was brought to me by a constituent whose name is Marcus Raitt. He's an attorney, and he actually filed a brief in the Thurlow v. City of South Portland case. I hadn't realized it at the time that he reached out to me, but I'm glad that he brought this issue to our attention, and I'm really excited that all of you are interested in diving into it. From a process perspective, Lindsay, do you want to take us through the statutes, or would you like me to do that? How would you like to handle that?
That's entirely up to you. If you'd like to walk through them, you're welcome to, or I can do it either way.
Okay. I think I'll just do a quick walkthrough. This is an area of the law that I worked in a little bit when I had a law practice, but there are a number of statutes that deal with personnel records and create exceptions to the public access law. And I will take them in the order that they're sitting on my desk, actually. So the first one is in Title 30A, and that relates to municipal records. It's 2702, and I think you all received it as a handout. And if you look at Section 1B, it talks about municipal records that are confidential. And if you look at 1B5, it talks about complaints, charges, or accusations of misconduct. And I see Eric's hand is up. Go ahead, Eric.
Just a suggestion, whether for the benefit of those that might be watching the recording, whether one of the staff might want to put up on the screen the documents you're talking about. That's typically what we do.
That is an excellent suggestion. I appreciate I appreciate you bringing that up. Let's pause here while we do that.
Yes.
Are you able to see my screen?
Yes, perfect. Yeah, and if you could scroll down so that B is showing, that's would be great. Thank you. Okay, so I'll continue. And I just wanted to ask committee members, if you have a question, do the same thing Eric did, which is just raise your electronic hand and I will call on you. And if I'm not seeing you, just unmute and let me know you have a question or a comment. And so subparagraph B creates an exception to public access for municipal records of various types. B5 is the one that's particularly relevant to our work today, and it talks about complaints, charges, or accusations of misconduct and replies to those complaints if they are materials that might result in discipline. And so those are confidential. However, if disciplinary action is taken, the final written decision is no longer confidential after the decision is complete if it imposes or upholds discipline. And then this is unique to the confidentiality exception in 30A. The decision must state the conduct or other facts on the basis of which disciplinary action is being imposed and the conclusions of the acting authority as to the reasons for that action. So that sentence isn't in some of the other statutes. And then there's a provision that relates to if that decision is subject to arbitration and is overturned, the final decision is public, except that the employees' names must be deleted and kept confidential. So that's the municipal law provision. And let's just take a pause and see if anybody has questions about that one before we move on. Not seeing any questions. Okay, the next one is Title V, Section 7070. And this applies to state employees. And again, if we look down at section 2E, this is the exception related to charges or accusations of misconduct and replies. And you'll see that it's somewhat similar to the 30A section that we just looked at. And it has the same requirements that if there is a final written decision that imposes or upholds discipline, that final written decision is no longer confidential, unless an arbitrator overturns the decision, in which case the decision itself is not confidential, but the employee's name must be deleted. And as I said, it doesn't have that language about the containing the factual basis that we saw in 30A. So any questions about this one, Representative Harnett?
Thank you, Senator Carney. And this is a question for our OPLA analyst. Do you have any idea why the language that's in the municipal statute pertaining to disclosing the facts of the underlying discipline is not contained in this section and some of the others that we're looking at?
No, I'm not sure why that one provision has that extra sentence. I'd be happy to do some research to look into the legislative history on that and provide that to the subcommittee.
Thank you.
Eric Stout?
And would now be a time, the leading paragraph says, except as described in 7070-A, which is about law enforcement, specifically two conditions of deadly force or physical force. And then it, it, lifts some of those restrictions. So is now the time to bring that in, or at some point? I think that'd be important.
Yep. If there are no questions about 7070, let's move on to that one. And this is one of the ones that Eric provided in his email this morning.
And the email came from Lindsay, but it was, yes. You know,
originated. Yeah, I missed describing it. He emailed it to Lindsay and I, and then Lindsay circulated it to the subcommittee. And this is 7070A is referenced in 7070 that we just looked at. And Eric, did you wish to speak to this one?
Well, only to say that if the focus of the originating inquiry is about accountability for law enforcement, you know, whereas what you just described was about all government employees generally across the board. The municipal is all local government. The state one, the Title V, is all state employees, myself and 14,000 other people. But this one is specifically about law enforcement officers. So since that was the genesis of the inquiry and this subcommittee, it wasn't in the original materials. So I thought it'd be important that we, you know, be aware of this and focus on it. So I just wanted to bring that up. Whereas the other Title V is about state employees across the board. This is specifically about just law enforcement officers. That's all I wanted to add.
Thank you. Yeah, and so as Eric indicated, this one is specifically about law enforcement officers. And it says that the name of a law enforcement officer is not confidential under Section 7070, subsection 2, paragraph E. That's the one we were just looking at. In cases involving the use of deadly force by a law enforcement officer, or the use of physical force by a law enforcement officer that results in death or serious bodily injury. And it says that regardless of whether disciplinary action is taken, the findings of any investigation into the officer's conduct are no longer confidential when the investigation's completed and a decision on whether to bring criminal charges has been made, except that if criminal charges are brought, the findings are confidential until the conclusion of the criminal case. And so this is the, as Eric pointed out, the law enforcement specific provision. And so any questions regarding this, Representative Harnett?
Thank you, Senator Carney. I would just point out that that exact language is also contained in the municipal statute that we just reviewed. And I think it's word for word. So it's there as well.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Eric?
I guess maybe we'll get into this in the discussion, but I guess the question that I have, or maybe the core issue, is that if, like the maybe it'd be appropriate to at some point to bring up the other document I suggested that Lindsay sent out, which is the record schedules, which says that the records are deleted. You know, they're retained 5 years for state or 60 years for municipal, unless the bargaining agreement says they can be destroyed earlier. And it specifically cites that in both of the local and the state record schedules. But my question is whether what we just looked at in the case of law enforcement, does that override the general case of, you know, employee personnel records generally across the board? Because it seems to be the legislative intent to carve that out as being of particular, you know, transparency. So I guess that's my question. And maybe if it's appropriate, Senator, whether we want to show at this point the other document that Lindsay sent out this morning, which I sent to her, what the state archives, state schedules, and local schedules say specifically on disciplinary records.
Thank you for that suggestion. I think what we're going to do, though, is we've got one more statute to look at, and I think it'll just be easier if we review all of the statutes first, and then we can transition to those other issues. Thank you. And so the last section has to do with county records, and that is found in Title 30A, Section 503, and we'll take a look at that in just a moment. Thanks, Lindsay. And so if you look at section 1B5, you'll see this is going to look very familiar. It talks about the same complaints and responses being an exception to public records and unless disciplinary action is taken. And again, you'll see that if an arbitrator overturns the disciplinary action, the name of the employee must be deleted, but the action is publicly accessible. And then again, there's no reference to that, the decision being required to contain facts about the action that caused imposition of discipline. And so, let's see. And then, and thank you, Lindsay. And then if you look at section 1-A, again, you'll see that this is the same language that we were just looking at in 77A, which has to do with investigations of deadly force or physical force by a law enforcement officer. And so any questions, concerns? Okay. So I think that's sort of the statutory landscape. And I think maybe we'll follow Eric's suggestion and take a look at the retention schedule. And Kate McBrien, I would love for you, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but if you could perhaps discuss the retention schedule with us, are you okay doing that?
Sure, happy to.
And Lindsay's gonna screen share it, so just give us a moment.
Okay, so these records retention schedules are created by staff at the State Archives with a lot of collaboration with various agencies, input from experts, as well as review by both the Attorney General's Office and our Archives Advisory Board. And so what you see on the screen is the snippet about the schedule that relates to employee personnel records from our state general schedule. These were actually just revised last year. And this part actually about employee personnel records really required a lot of discussion and a lot of review. And so what we were told by both the Bureau of Human Resources as well as the Attorney General's office was that the contract with the employee union would supersede any other, basically any other sort of retention that may have been included in statutes, that it was the contract that had to really drive a retention because it was a signed bargaining contract. We also are in the process of reviewing the local government general schedule. Part of what the archives does is we create a general schedule for county and municipalities. We don't have the same sort of oversight for records of local government as we do for state government because we are a state agency. But we do create records retention schedules based on input from municipalities. This will go through the same process, gathering a lot of input, a lot of feedback, a lot of suggestions. This is the current general record for local government, but we expect to revise it to try to match the state general schedule a little bit closer. That's why it does look like there's a massive difference. You know, the state record retention schedule right now says that employee disciplinary records would be kept for 5 years or less if the bargaining contract says less. For local government, it says 60 years. That's a big difference, and that's something we would be aiming to change to try to make keep those two schedules closer and in line with each other. But again, that's more of a process in working with the municipalities, the Maine Municipal Association, the Attorney General's Office, our Archives Advisory Board. We get a lot of input. It goes through a lot of review before any of these are created and changed. So we're in the process of that for the local government schedules.
Thank you very much, Kate. And committee subcommittee members, are there any questions about or comments about this? Questions for Kate, comments for members of the committee to share? Representative Harnett?
Thank you, Senator Carney. Thank you, Kate. I guess my question, and it's a concern, and it's particularly a concern if you read carefully the two opinions that we received, where the court treated internal affairs records differently than personnel records. And I'm wondering why your committee decided that a union contract or some collective bargaining agreement could trump the need for transparency, the need for the documents to remain public because there are exceptions. I mean, they are covered by the Freedom of Access Law. If we're destroying them after 5 years, then they don't see the light of public scrutiny. So I'm just curious as to what that, and this is probably an impossible question to just answer off the cuff, what that discussion was and why that agreement to honor the CBA rather than the spirit of the law was determined.
I think that's an excellent question. And I think that's one that I would love to explore again a little bit more. All I can say right now is that Bureau of Human Resources told us that this is how they operate. This is how they understand the law. Our assistant attorney general, who's actually John Bolton and serves on the Right to Know Advisory Committee, he reviewed this in depth and actually worked with the assistant attorney general assigned to human resources. And they both agreed that legally, this is how it's supposed to work. And so that was the guidance that the Archives Advisory Board, went with, because that was the legal opinion that was provided to us. Okay. The actual reasoning behind that, I think we'd have to ask John probably.
But theoretically, you could have an officer who was disciplined for egregious conduct. 5 years later, that's destroyed. He or she then applies for another law enforcement position, and the subsequent employer would have no access to those disciplinary records. Is that fair to say?
I believe so. I will add that part of the complication when it comes to employee records and human resource records is that there is no one place that these records live. Bureau of Human Resources has their own set of records. Agencies tend to keep their own set of records about employees, whether they're supposed to or not. It tends to happen quite a bit. So these general schedules and retentions are supposed to apply across the board. They're not consistently followed. I think it's one of the problems that has really come up, and something that I'm concerned about is that there could be numerous copies that even if one agency followed the retention schedule and destroyed it at a certain time, another copy of it may not have met that same destruction. So I think that's an added complication, actually.
Thank you.
I would like to add to Tom's concern that I think that this issue, a concern about access to disciplinary records, comes up in other contexts as well. As an attorney, I was involved frequently in cases involving claims of employment discrimination, and in particular, workplace harassment. And if records disappear every 5 years, it it makes it very difficult, I think, on both sides of those cases to prove either to prove that there is a severe and persistent hostile work environment, or on the other hand, for an employer, namely the state or a local entity, to prove that they did take appropriate disciplinary action in the past. And so I'm concerned too about the implication that a collective bargaining agreement could override the right to know law. Eric?
Just to remind you that both Representative Harnett and Senator Carney said concerned about 5 years, but the language we just saw and Kate just mentioned says, or earlier, if the collective bargaining unit says so. So what I don't know, I don't think we know, is what that says. It might be much earlier, shorter than 5 years, which is even, you know, more worser than the scenario that you're describing.
Maybe what we could do now just briefly is to have, if Lindsay, if you could please screen share, because we did get several collective bargaining agreements and they're all very similar language, but that'll give us all, and they were distributed, but so that members of the public who are watching or others who might want to look at this later can see the actual language from some sample collective bargaining agreements.
Bear with me one moment. I'm going to be screen sharing. This is from the packet that was posted to the subcommittee's website and distributed to the members. So these are excerpts from existing agreements. So bear with me. Are you able to see my screen?
We are.
Excellent. Okay, and would you like me, did you want to walk through these, Senator Carney, or would you like me to?
You can go ahead and walk through it, Lindsay, thank you.
Okay, so starting with, this is the Maine Service Employees Association. These are just some examples for the committee's review, professional and technical services bargaining unit agreement. And we pulled out the section specific to personnel files. So let's see. So this gives you information about just sort of what their what a personnel file might include, the right to view the file. But if we look further down, upon request of an employee, records of warnings, reprimands, preventable actions shall be removed from the personnel file after 3 years from the date of the occurrence, provided the employee has no further disciplinary action since that date. Upon request of an employee, records of suspensions and disciplinary demotion shall be removed from personnel files after 5 years from the date of the occurrence, provided that the employee has no further disciplinary action since that date. So there are some carve outs here. Records of suspensions resulting from patient client abuse, neglect, or mistreatment shall not be removed from personnel files under the provisions of this paragraph. And then we have warnings and reprimands shall be deemed removed from the personnel files after 3 years from the date of the occurrence, provided the employee has no further discipline. And records of preventable accidents shall be deemed to be removed after 3 years from the date. So unless there are questions, I'm just going to keep going to the next one.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, and this agreement is between the state of Maine and the Maine State Troopers Association, State Police Unit. Excuse my scrolling. Okay, upon request of an employee, corrective memos shall be removed from his or her personnel file after 1 year from the date of the corrective memo if the employee has received no further discipline. Upon request of an employee, reprimands shall be removed from the file after 3 years from the date of the reprimand if the employee has received no further discipline. Again, upon request of an employee, suspensions shall be removed after 5 years from the date of the suspension if there's been no further discipline. And then upon written request of an employee 60 days prior to his retirement date, corrective memos, reprimands, suspensions shall be removed from the personnel file with a 3-year look back. And I will scroll to the next one. And then lastly, this is between State of Maine and Maine State Law Enforcement Association. And So this talks about personnel files generally, and then upon request of an employee, records of reprimands and preventable accidents shall be removed from the files after 3 years from the date of the occurrence, provided the employee has had no further disciplinary action since that date, as at the request of the employee. Then also on request of the employee, records of suspensions and disciplinary demotions shall be removed from the personnel files after 5 years from the date of the occurrence, provided the employee has not had any further disciplinary action since that date. And then that exception for records of disciplinary suspensions resulting from patient-client abuse, neglect, or mistreatment shall not be removed in accordance with the paragraph. And that is it.
Thank you. And as you were reviewing those, Lindsay, it occurred to me that we probably want to also get a couple of sample collective bargaining agreements from some municipal and county law enforcement bargaining units. Questions, comments, committee members? Representative Harnett, and then Linda Clancy.
Thank you, Senator Carney. I would just point out that all of the language that Lindsay just read talks about removing things from personnel files, personnel records. And when we review the cases that were provided to the subcommittee, the court drew clear distinctions between personnel records and internal affairs records. Things can be removed from personnel records so that they are not considered in future employment decisions regarding promotions, et cetera. So I don't want us to be reading that the removal from personnel records means that those records no longer exist somewhere else and are still subject to FOA.
Linda Clancy?
Yeah, I just want to make sure I understand. The Law Enforcement Association, that does not apply to the county and municipalities, or does that? I'm not clear on who that applies to.
The collective bargaining agreements we just looked at?
The latter, the one we just finished looking at.
Okay. Lindsay, can you, it's a specific group of state employees represented by a specific bargaining unit. And Lindsay, can you just remind us which one that one was? The last one.
Yes, I will. I've got to pull up the full agreement just to double check. So bear with me one moment.
Okay.
I apologize. I think I'm going to have to get back to you on this. I'd like to take a look. I'm not entirely clear which, I don't know enough about sort of the law enforcement, sort of various entities to identify it just from this. So is that possible for me to follow up with the subcommittee on that?
Yes.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Eric Stell?
Yeah, so I'm not sure, but the first one we looked at is specifically the Maine State Troopers, but then Maine law enforcement generally would include the wardens, the Marine Patrol, probably the DEA agents. You know, there's lots of people that are in the law enforcement business at the state level that aren't specifically Maine State Troopers. So just to cue you that, you know, to maybe look to see whether that's what it covers more broadly.
Thank you. Do committee members agree that having a couple of sample municipal and county collective bargaining agreements would help with our work? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, and again, I don't think we're gonna be able to look at all of them, but I think samples will give us an appreciation of the concern. Judy Meyer?
So I know in Androscoggin County, the collective bargaining agreement specifically says these are public records and will be retained for all time. So they're very specific about it. I don't know why that happened, but it's very different from some of the other counties' work. But I'd like to see if we can get a better definition on what does removed mean? Are they removed and destroyed? Are they removed and housed somewhere else? What does removed mean, especially if they also have to be in internal affairs files? They can't be utterly destroyed. And finally, I wonder how much this is actually happening. How many officers specifically are asking to have their records scrubbed, if it matters.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And I have a question for Kate. If Kate, are you still with us? I can ask her when she returns, but I appreciate the point you made, Representative Harnett, about the records still being present potentially in an internal affairs file. But I also wonder what the record retention schedule is for those documents and how a requester would know to ask for an internal affairs file instead of a personnel record, especially if the requester was a lay person who wasn't familiar with the fact that there were different types of files. So that was news to me as well. Kate, thank you for rejoining us.
My apologies. We lost power at the office suddenly and all the computers shut down. So I had to restart everything. Apologies.
Well, welcome back. I did have a question for you, and I'm kind of putting you on the spot. If you can't answer it, if you could get us the information, we're wondering what the retention schedule would be for a different type of file, like an internal affairs file, for example, that would also contain a record of disciplinary action that wouldn't be subject to the same kind of personnel file record retention schedule.
That is an excellent question, and I don't have the answer for you off the top of my head, but I will get it to you.
Thank you. I did also want to point out, Lindsay, go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to follow up on the question earlier regarding who Maine State Law Enforcement Association, the entities that they represent. On their website, their active member groups are listed as Attorney General Detectives, Adult Probation Officers, BMV Detectives, Capitol Police, Correctional Investigators, Juvenile Community Correctional Officers, Judicial Marshals, Maine Fire Marshal Investigators, Maine Forest Rangers, Game Wardens, Marine Patrol, and Military Police. So those are who they represent. I'm going to take a further look. I can't say for sure that agreement applies to all of those groups, but I just want to get you that information.
Thanks. I did want to add to our discussion a statement that was made by the judge in the Thurlow versus South Portland case on page 9 of that decision, because the judge is kind of looking at this issue of removing and whether removing a file means that it gets destroyed. And the judge said, although the terms may be slightly different in plain meaning, their usage carries the same practical effect. Removal of a written reprimand and destruction of disciplinary documents achieve the same desired result. And I'd actually kind of like to probe that a little bit and see if that is the case, or if, removing a document from a personnel file is different because it's retained in an internal affairs investigative file. I think we've got a good idea of the landscape, and I'd just like to transition to a committee discussion of how we feel about the concerns that have been raised to our subcommittee and what additional information we might like to have access to. Would anybody like to kick off the conversation? I guess I would ask the media representatives who are part of our subcommittee if you've had direct involvement in this issue, and if you can share some of your personal experience with us.
I'm happy to jump in.
Thank you.
Yes, we've had a lot of experience with this and a lot of experience with what happens when years go by and disciplinary records are no longer available. We have, I'll just give you an actual case study. There was an officer in Mexico who was charged with domestic violence assault, And we wondered, as we do, if he was charged with this, what other instances in his background may he have had disciplinary action? And we had to go to each one of his employers along the line. We had to get that information from the Criminal Justice Academy, track down all their employers, get all of his records, some of which were available, some of which were not. But what we uncovered was a career of poor behavior on the job, including he was doing Saturday morning errands at the Sherwin-Williams paint store, and he had a loaded handgun in his pocket, his revolver, you know, department issued revolver, reached in to get his wallet and he fired his gun, scared everybody in the place half to death. He was disciplined for that, but the records were so partial, we never knew if he finish the discipline? Was there any going back, any additional training? It was just completely piecemeal. So we ended up writing about this piecemeal cloth that we had, and it got the attention of the Maine Criminal Justice Academy, who then went back to the department itself because it has the power to do this, and demanded that they produce all of the disciplinary records in full, even if they had to recreate them. And this officer ended up being decertified because of his career path and behavior. But the public didn't have access to all of that information because it is so spotty. So this idea that we could have access to records at the discretion of the departments and allowing the employees who have been disciplined themselves to ask to have those records removed, to me, it defies logic. I mean, of course, everybody wouldn't want to have their discipline removed from their personnel file. Who wouldn't? But for police officers in particular, I think that the public has a right to know if they've been responsible on the job every day. And I could go on, but that's like a super clear example from the past for me.
Thank you for providing that example. I'm sorry, I had to turn around. My phone in my office rang. I'm just trying to get rid of the noise. Okay. Would anybody else like to share an experience or perspective on this issue? Linda?
Sorry, that's the wrong hand signal. No, but I don't have any illustrations of that, but I do want to agree with Judy on two words, that it's piecemeal and spotty, especially when we have several levels of law enforcement, municipal, county, state, and then we have various unions, and then we have the other, the wardens and the fire marshals and forestry. So.
Thank you. Other comments from anybody, reflections on where we should go with our committee work? Amy?
I don't have specific examples either, but my question is also what happens when a person moves from agency to agency. If an officer can move from one municipality to another municipality, are those records removed in the amount of time that the CBA says, or after 5 years, or ever? And can they request, even after they've left that agency, that they be removed?
Okay, thank you. Those are good issues for us to look into. Representative Harnett?
Thank you, Senator Carney. And just to build on Amy's question, there are two issues to me. One is the public's right to access these records and when are they being destroyed, et cetera. But putting on my ex-mayor hat, a concern when a municipality is hiring a law enforcement officer and when he or she had worked at another municipality or another state agency, are they able to get those disciplinary records? Because if they are not, they run the risk of making a hire that could expose them to serious potential liability. If they know somebody's been disciplined for routinely violating, not coming up with an example, but they might not want to hire that person. And if they are kept in the dark, I think there's a real danger of subsequent employers exposing their community to potential liability.
Thank you for raising that. I agree with that concern. And I would just build on you building on Amy, which is the other concern is that you can expose, if it's a case of unlawful workplace harassment, you could be exposing through a hiring decision your existing staff to harmful conduct as well. Kate?
Thanks to Eric's help, I was able to find the internal affairs records retention, at least for public safety, which is actually it's Schedule 1893. And I'll send a link of this to Lindsay and Colleen so it can be distributed to everyone. But it says that Maine State Police Office of Professional Standards, Internal Affairs, personnel complaint records are to be retained for 6 years in office and then destroyed. And I believe that 6 year retention begins when the investigation is complete and the file is closed. So just to kind of give you that further information. I will add that I've asked the same question to Bureau of Human Resources about when files, if someone leaves a department and moves to another department. The answer that was provided to me, and this was actually part of the whole general schedule thing, the answer was provided to me was that disciplinary records are supposed to be part of the employee file at the Bureau of Human Resources, so that even if someone moves to another department, it still stays within the file and maintains the same years. Also, when an employee transfers from one department to another, one of the questions you're supposed to ask is there any active disciplinary action within your personnel file that we should be made aware of? That's a required question of any state employee. So just to kind of add that information for you.
Thanks. Representative Harnett?
Thank you. And I'm sorry to keep asking so many questions. Lindsay, did you say, Kate, 6 years or 60 years?
Six.
For internal, six.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Kate, I know that you are the state archivist, but do you have any sense of what's happening at the county or municipal level with regard to record retention schedules?
I think we do provide the general schedules for local government, which is supposed to be county and municipal. And so that's supposed to provide a lot of general guidance about the records that every municipality and county would create, including personnel records. That would be 60 years right now is what it says, 60 years for municipal records. But we're looking at that and taking comment on that right now. But individual records for departments, I couldn't speak to. That's really up to the municipal level. We only provide, by statute, we provide a general schedule for the general records that are created by everybody.
Thank you. And so are you providing guidance or are you actually setting a standard when you do that work?
That's the difficult part when it comes to local government, is we have no authority over local government. So when we set a general schedule, I'm not sure that we could really say we're setting a regulation that they have to follow. It is more of a guidance that they're supposed to follow.
Okay, thank you. Other comments and questions? Eric?
Sorry to keep talking so much. Just to build on what Kate just said, I did take the liberty to send that to the distribution of the email those who were talking here. The copy, the actual PDF copy of the Department of Public Safety agency schedule. So Kate was referring to the general schedules, which are records that are common to most or all agencies. But then each agency has an agency specific schedule. So what you have in your email, and I don't know whether since Tom mentioned about mentioned internal affairs, I did a search on internal affairs and came up with these two items on page 53 and 54, which you have in your email. And I don't, and Kate summarized that it's 6 years. But I don't know if it's, if you want to take a minute or two to actually show that on the screen, what I sent to you and that Kate just referred to, specifically pages 53 and 54 of that document, which is from the public safety agency schedule. But there may be other, you know, law enforcement entities, that long list that Lindsay quoted, you know, Marine Patrol and the wardens and the fire marshal and the DEA and all those others, those that fall under the public safety schedule, which would be the troopers and DEA and the fire marshal are all under Department of Public Safety. Those would be incorporated in the department-wide agency schedule that I'm just talking about. But inland fisheries and wildlife would be where the wardens are, and then Department of Marine Patrol would be where the Department of Marine Resources would be where Marine Patrol is under. So they would supposedly follow their schedules. But we could research to see what each of those law enforcement entities have for records retention if it mentions something like internal affairs, like public safety does. But I just sent that to you, and that could potentially be posted on the public website after the fact, since we're talking about it.
Okay, thank you. Lindsay, are you able to share that just so that we can get a look at it? I think Eric said pages 53 and 54.
Yes, bear with me one moment. Eric, you'll have to let me know if I'm sharing the wrong thing, but I think this is it, so. Okay, so this is the document that Eric sent around, this starting on page 53. I believe, Eric, this is what you were referring to with the internal affairs and a 6-year retention period.
Right, and then there's a second item on the next page, but maybe give people a chance to read that one first. And Kate just summarized that, but 6 years is very often the case. And I think that's driven from the, you know, attorney advice about the general statute of, you know, statute of limitation on litigation. There's different timeframes. I mean, you attorneys know better, but depending on the type of litigation, but general litigation, generally 6 years is often referenced.
Yeah, that is
correct. Schedules.
Yeah, although there are some exceptions to that relate to discovery rules, and then for claims involving sexual assault of a minor, there actually is no statute of limitations.
Yeah, no statute of limitations, right. But just mentioning that because 6 years will commonly come up in the record schedules.
Mm-hmm. Representative Harnett?
Thank you, Senator Carney. Just looking at Schedule 1893, isn't this limited to cases in which there is no discipline? These are about complaints that were deemed unfounded, not sustained, or the person was exonerated. And I'm just looking at this for the first time, so I could be wrong, but it's more about complaint-related records than discipline, the records in which discipline has been imposed.
That does seem to be the case. I do think that this concern regarding retention of records needs a little bit deeper of a dig and research than we can accomplish live here during the meeting. So let's put this on our list of information to have at our next meeting. Does that sound okay to everyone?
Thank you.
Okay, so what we'll do, and I don't think we necessarily need to do an exhaustive search regarding, you know, all state agencies or all municipal entities, but I think what we need to do is to have some representative or, you know, a sampling that sort of shows us the range of what the retention schedules are when there's a difference, so that we can understand what's whether and what sort of statutory approach we might want to take in recommended changes. So our what I've got so far on our list to dig into are some sample local and county collective bargaining agreements on this issue, and then more information about the retention of documents or destruction of documents in internal affairs files and similar files. And we can also see if we can, you know, find that type of file at the municipal level as well. So those are two big pieces of information that we'll take up at our next meeting. Are there other concerns that subcommittee members feel we should research and bring back to the subcommittee at our next meeting? Are there additional people that we would like, let me finish my sentence, additional people who we would like to come and speak to the subcommittee on these issues? And I'll put that on hold for a moment and call on Judy. Go ahead, Judy.
So we've been talking about this distinction with internal affairs records and personnel files in departments that don't have internal affairs investigations. That's like a whole other universe, a much larger universe than the world of policing. So I don't know if we need to draw a distinction there and talk about just like regular records that don't have that extra layer of investigation.
Okay, I do think that that's important. Thank you for raising it, because that takes us into the realm of, for example, workplace harassment and, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. Linda?
Is it possible to invite perhaps Jonathan Bolton to just illustrate or tell us that decision-making that Kate was referencing?
Yes, we'll definitely do that. That's a great suggestion. Other suggestions for areas to explore or people to invite to speak with us? Eric?
Well, Kate mentioned two assistant attorneys general, one who advises the Secretary of State and State Archives, who's Jonathan Bolton, and then the other who advises the Bureau of Human Resources. So I don't know whether an invite to both of them would be appropriate, or we should only have, you know, secondhand, you know, through Jonathan Bolton, but I would suggest both.
Kate, could you remind us of the name of that other attorney, please?
I'm afraid I don't have the name of that attorney. I could look it up, but I'm sure John can tell us as well who he spoke with.
Great. Okay, so let's invite both of them. Other suggestions for information to gather or people to invite? I think I would like to see if there's somebody at Maine Municipal Association who could give us a municipal perspective on this issue, both with regard to law enforcement and kind of general employee issues. Anyone else we're leaving out who we feel like we should hear from? Linda?
I don't want to stack them. I don't want to get too many people at the meeting, maybe at another meeting or perhaps just an email or something, but from the county. level for the sheriffs.
Thank you. Representative Harnett.
Thank you, Senator Carney. What about inviting some of the attorneys that have tried to obtain these records? And I'm thinking in particular of your constituent who brought the, who was involved in the Thurlow case and has raised this issue with you. He's raised this issue with me to get the perspective of someone who's trying to seek these records. What are the challenges that they face, and how do they think that the law is being applied?
Okay. That's great. That seems like a very good addition to our examination of this issue. I will, I know that we have two additional committee meetings scheduled. And so I'm going to work with our OPLA analysts and maybe think of a way that we can ensure that we hear from all of these people who we've want to hear from in a time frame where we're really focused specifically on this issue so that we can make good use of subcommittee time and gather the information that we need. And so let's count on hearing from, well, we'll invite these people and hopefully hear from them at our next subcommittee meeting. And we will also gather some of the other information that we discussed earlier. Is there anything else? And I'm going to turn to you, Lindsay. I know you've been listening really carefully to our conversation and doing a lot of other things as well. Can you think of anything that we should be addressing before we wrap up today's meeting?
No, I think we've got it covered. We've got some things to look into. The next meeting is scheduled for November 3rd. I think that's it for now.
Okay. I did want to raise this issue that I pointed out at the beginning, the statute that does, there's a difference in the language of the statutes. The one requires that the information contain more factual evidence than just, you know, a broad brush statement that discipline is merited and has been imposed. And I would like to know if that we feel that that concern is within the scope of our subcommittee's work, looking at whether to include that language in the other exceptions. I'm seeing one thumbs up. So do we want to add that to our discussion at our next meeting? A couple thumbs up. Okay, it seems like there's some interest in pursuing that. So we'll add that another thumb. Okay, so we will add that to our discussion for next week, next meeting. And it does sound like our next meeting will be a full 2 hours. It's scheduled for Thursday, November 3rd from 9 to 10:30. And I would just ask if we feel that we are comfortable meeting for 2 hours at that time, since we have a big agenda. Okay, see some nodding heads. Okay, so we'll make that change. And then I think that's it. All right, everybody, thank you for your good work today. And see you all soon.
Thank you all. Bye. Bye.